Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hi there, Paul.
Hi, Mark.
Hey, we're talking about something I don't know if we've talked about before, but it is what you call the power of appointment.
Yeah.
And this is a show particularly for people who are married.
That's correct.
And doing their estate planning and something they need to keep in mind is a very powerful tool.
It is. It's a powerful tool and one that I don't see enough of when I review other plans that come across my desk. And so that's the premise is, what are other people doing? The only way that I see what others are doing, in other words, other attorneys, or even if somebody uses a basic document, a fill-in-the-blank document, one that they get online, then templated documents are almost rarely and never going to have this specific power for a surviving spouse. So here's the scenario. Married couple, they do their estate plan, and the first spouse dies, okay? And then we're left with a surviving spouse. So how does a surviving spouse then manage the estate according to the vision that they had when they were married? So a power of appointment allows a surviving spouse to then redirect and maneuver finances as they see fit. There could be some positives to that. There could be some negatives to that. And that's what we're going to uncover is, what is this thing called a power of appointment? How does it work? Why is it a powerful tool? And honestly, I don't know why it's so underutilized because it really is, for lack of better terminology, it's a card game term, which is, it's a trump card. It's the card that overrides almost everything else. And the question is that what we want to give to a surviving spouse? Many first-time married couples would say yes. Blended families, well, that's a longer conversation. And so it really depends on what your current circumstance is. And how much power do we want to leave to one another should the first die? And there's many iterations of what a power of appointment could look like, but I really need to talk about this tool because it really needs to be in a married couple's plan to ensure that whatever they envision is going to play out properly.
Now, I would think this would be just a no-brainer. It should be part of every plan. Why isn't it part of every plan?
I can't answer the why, because I can't go back to other attorneys and say, why didn't you put this in there?
So this is in your plans that you create.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Now, let's talk about the type of plans where this would fall into. Mm-hmm. Number one, if you utilize a will package, then a power of appointment really has no power or effect, because as a reminder, in a will, if I was to die first, I'm in essence leaving everything to my spouse and it becomes all her property. She has absolute complete power and control over everything once I die. She has the ultimate decision-making authority, which is, it's her asset. So if it's her asset, she gets to decide whatever she wants to do. A power of appointment is extremely necessary in a trust plan. So if you utilize a revocable living trust, that's the other planning tool that somebody can use to do an estate plan. So you have a will or you have a revocable living trust.
So would you say then the power of appointment is just it's part of the design then of a will anyway?
Well, it's not in a will, because when I die, if I use a will, I'm giving everything to my spouse. We either use joint assets, we use a beneficiary designation. Everything goes to my everything goes to my spouse.
So this is only a feature for a trust.
Only for a trust. Okay. Now, there could be I've talked about this third design plan, which I don't use. It's called a testamentary trust, which is when an attorney will use a will and they'll throw a trust in it. I don't like using that type of a plan. I believe that it's a fallacy. I don't believe that it will legally work. the language that the attorneys use is fine, but it won't practically work. And I think that there's legal issues with it. So there is this third type of planning out there that I rarely talk about because I just don't like it and I don't personally use it. And so that's when you have a will, but you try to stick a trust in it. That is a trust, and that trust should similarly have a power of appointment. So a power of appointment is only used in a trust scenario.
Okay.
So if you use a will, this is not applicable because you're giving all your assets to your spouse. They have full control of the entire estate.
Okay.
So if they get remarried, if they choose to get mad at one of the kids, then everything is theirs and they can give anything they want to a new spouse. They can give it all to charity. They can disinherit a child. Why? Because it's their property. Their name is on the asset.
Well, that sounds to me like power of appointment to me.
Well, and that's what
so
we're getting
to. So I need to define terms here
That's right. And that's what we're getting to.
That sounds pretty powerful
to me. And that is really the ultimate power of appointment, but we just don't call it that. We call it fee simple. We call it it is the ownership to the surviving spouse. But that's really what a power of appointment is doing. So you're right in the respect that a power of appointment is giving rights or the power, I'm using quotes even though no one else but you can see, the power to direct or appoint the assets within a trust. Because when the first spouse passes away, that portion becomes irrevocable. So in other words, if I die, I have set up plans and instructions on what to do with my portion of the community property, or if I have separate property, like if I received an inheritance or something like that, that my spouse and I determine, I'm going to manage that. I get to determine what happens to that specific asset because it came from an inheritance. Then all of that goes into a decedent's trust because I've died. That becomes irrevocable. Why? Because I can no longer make a change, well, because I'm dead. So therefore, that's the scenario. We have the first spouse who has passed away. Their part of the trust has become irrevocable, unchangeable, fixed in time. So if it's fixed, how can a surviving spouse speak to do something differently to those assets? And that's called a power of appointment. So a trust, a well-designed trust, should have language in it that says, but if my spouse is still alive, now this is not exactly what it would say. We have to use better language than what I'm using on the radio. But the idea of what the power of appointment says is, if my spouse is alive, then I'm giving to him or her this type of power. And so we can then leave all power. We can leave limited power. We can say that you can only leave things to the kids, but how you leave it to them is up to you. Or no, you could leave it to charities and the kids, but you could never leave it to another spouse. Or I'll give you the broadest power in the world, which is you can do whatever you want. So you can leave it to a new spouse. You can leave it to the next door neighbor. You can leave it to charities. You can leave it to the kids. In other words, you can do everything. And that is kind of what you were talking about. That's like a will almost, the same power given in a will, which is it's really just your asset, but it's housed in this irrevocable trust because I passed away. So what is a power of appointment? Well, power of appointment then is this power or this right left behind to a surviving spouse to direct or say what can be done with my assets after I pass away.
Okay, so then what else can you say about how it works?
Yeah, so there are technicalities in a well-designed power of appointment. Now, some of them are derived off of taxes. So as soon as I start mentioning the word tax, half of the listening audience goes to sleep. But it's derived out of the tax code because one of the powerful reasons that we use a revocable living trust, it's for tax purposes. And so when I pass away, my assets go to a decedent's trust. So my trust, it splits into two. It becomes a his and her trust, for lack of better terminology. My wife is left with her portion of the estate, and my portion of the estate now is in this irrevocable trust. So a power of appointment, how it works is that the language says, my spouse, if she has left this power, and if she wants to invoke it, or we call it an exercise of the power of appointment, if she wants to exercise this power, then she must do it in written form. So it can't just be verbally. It must be memorialized. So my spouse would have to go back to an attorney and actually, whether it's in her will or whether it's a part of the revocable living trust, or it can actually be a standalone document. I don't advise that. I don't like that because now I have another document out there, right? It's just floating out in a drawer someplace. So the preferred style of doing it, in from my perspective, is put it into the will or put it into the into her surviving trust, and she just simply would communicate what she wants to do. Now, the tax alignment says that she can't leave it to her estate, so because that would cause tax inclusion. She can't leave it to herself. Again, tax inclusion. She can't pay her creditors or the creditors of her estate. So all of that language is a tax arrangement to ensure that my portion of the estate would not be counted as her portion, because if it is, there may be a risk that it's taxed. And one of the reasons, like I said, that we do a revocable living trust is to ensure that we take advantage of the taxing system to the greatest degree possible for married couples, and we split the trust into for tax purposes and protection purposes. So there has to be language in the power of appointment so that my portion doesn't accidentally get pulled back to hers. That would be a bad thing. Mm. That would kill the tax monster. Mm. So therefore, how does it work? It must be exercised by a written instrument with specific language, and the language has to operate within the elections that I left behind so that it is properly done.
Okay, then, so go on more than how, when it can be used. Is it during the lifetime or only at death or both? Or
right. So obviously, if my spouse has to do a written instrument, she has to be alive to do that, number one. So she has to exercise it during her lifetime.
Okay.
But there are two types of appointments that we can use. The most common is that she directs the money at her death. So for an example, so I've left this power to my spouse. It's this tool to say, because I'm gone, you see what's happening in the family. You see what's happening with the ministries that we elected to leave money to. You see what's happening with the missionaries that we support and whether they retired or passed away. And so the reason that this is such a powerful tool is because my wife, as she is still alive, has the ability to see what's happening, and I no longer do. So therefore, if she outlives me by 10, 15, 20 years, which is a possibility in specifically if someone were to pass away in their 60s or young 70s and another spouse lives for 10, 15, 20 years, then there's a lot that has changed in the family structure. It could change in our children, in their financial capacity, in grandchildren. There could be addiction issues. There's so many reasons why a strong power of appointment may need to be triggered, because life goes on after somebody passes away, and we set up a vision of what the estate plan is supposed to look like based upon the information that we have today. But if I die, I no longer have any insight to what happens with the family. So this power of appointment is left behind so that my spouse can then adjust the plan holistically and together, if indeed that's the election, as the family and as life continues to move forward. So if one of the kids had catastrophic health issues, would that possibly change how we need to leave the plan? The answer is yes, because we can do better work if we know what the current situation is. If we don't leave a power of appointment, and again, most trusts that I see do not have this tool, that means my instructions are fixed when I die. And even though my wife is alive, she can only change her portion of the estate plan. my plan can no longer be changed. Therefore, with the power of appointment, she gets the opportunity to see what unfolds. So it's a power that she must exercise during her life, but it can either take place immediately or it can take place at her death. And we're up against a break,
yeah.
So I'll come back to that specific issue when we return.
Okay, talking about the power of appointment this week on the show. If the subject is of interest to you and you need some help with your estate plan, you want to get in touch with Paul, how do people do that, Paul?
Well, head over to my website, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us, and it's all found at legacyandfaith.com.
Okay, back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Can I avoid probate? Will I lose everything if my health becomes compromised? How do I preserve what I have for me and my family? Will the government take it all? This is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. These are some of the most common questions we get on a daily basis, and there are solutions for all of these issues. It is time for you to protect your family and what God has placed under your stewardship, and we can help. Go to legacyandfaith.com to find out more about our services and upcoming educational opportunities. That's Legacy and Faith.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. And continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, looking at something that is not utilized enough in estate planning, Paul believes, and that is the power of appointment. And continuing with this, Paul.
Yeah, so there's two ways that you can exercise the power of appointment. One is that a surviving spouse says, okay, I see something that is different, or I've had a change of heart, and there was a power left to me. And so I want to exercise it. So I'm going to do a written document that says how I want to change the plan.
Mm.
Okay. So that change can either happen immediately. That's called a lifetime power of appointment. So during the lifetime, something can be used out of my portion, because the story is I died. I've given my wife this power, this ability to watch the future unfold and reach back into my plan and make fine-tune adjustments on my behalf. And she can either exercise it immediately, which means money can then can leave what my plan is and benefit someone immediately. That's called a lifetime power of appointment. Or it can happen and she can write it that says, when I die. So then my wife's language would say, at her passing, then the whole plan holistically moves along the same path, which is a powerful tool because now we don't have two different plans. She could change her plan to do one thing with the finances, but my plan without a power of appointment is stuck in time, and my language may be completely different. So if one of our daughters had a health issue that she was going through, and Mariana said, oh, I need to change this. And if Paul were here, he would want this as well.
Mm.
That could be very powerful because then the plan is in unity again as my wife sees something change. But if not, then she can only change her portion.
Mm.
Now my daughter is inheriting two different sets of instructions. Unfortunately, that's the most common thing I see in estate planning, because this tool is not in proper planning.
Okay, so moving on then to some specifics of the power of the appointment and what the spouse can do. Who can they leave money to, the spouse? Can they give it to a new spouse? The nice caretaker who came into your life the last 6 months and they get everything?
Right, yeah.
Which is scenarios I've seen.
Right, and and this is a tricky question, isn't it? This is the sticky wicket. And so the question is, how much power do I want to leave? And I mentioned it at the top of the show, which is we can limit the power of appointment. So the limitations could be, well, you are allowed to adjust how we leave things to the kids. But you can't change their percentages, so they must inherit equally or as we have determined for whatever purposes that we have set. Mm. But you can then adjust how the beneficiaries receive it. So, for example, I've been using if one of my daughters had a health incident. We may want a stronger trust so that the money will last a long period of time if indeed one of my children was unable to work for the rest of her life. Well, that could change the vision by which we are going to leave that daughter our inheritance versus someone who is healthy, responsible, able to manage money. We may want to leave that more freely. Okay, so if we started with a plan that's more free, but life intervened and there was a problem, then a limited power of appointment may say, you can change how the money goes to the kids, but you can't change the beneficiaries. Or we can leave language that says, you can change the beneficiaries' percentages. So one daughter is doing really well financially, the other one has some health issues, and as a family meeting, they all meet up, and they agree as a family, no, it's okay. Leave more to my sister because I'm doing good financially. She's going to need long-term assistance. Mm. So now we've given greater flexibility. We've given not only the ability to change the terms and how someone uses the finances, but now we've left another additional power, which says you can also change the percentages.
Mm.
Okay. Now, the danger in that is that what if there is a difficult relationship behind the scenes? So what if a surviving spouse doesn't have a real peaceful relationship with the family? And if they favor one child over the other, human emotions get in this way. And these are difficult conversations to have with clients, but they're necessary so that we can get the right tool into the design so that it gives the opportunity long term. So is it okay to leave the ability to adjust the percentages between the family members, or is it just the tool to change how? Now, we could also leave what we call a broad. A broad power of appointment is you can really do anything. And that comes back to the question that you asked, well, could I leave it? Could it be left to a surviving to a new spouse? Could it be left to the caretaker? Could it be left to charities or to next door neighbors? That's broad. So in other words, the language is broad. It says, really, anybody that you want to leave my resources or my part of the inheritance to, I'm giving you full power and control. So that power then really allows that you can disinherit a child.
Yeah.
And many times when I say that to individuals, they go, oh, we would never disinherit a child. Okay, I understand that value, and I understand that current emotion. So the positive with that is that it really does give the surviving spouse a scope and the ability to maneuver the plan, both the surviving spouses and the decedents, so that the plan stays together and it moves in unison.
Mm.
That's a powerful tool.
Mm.
That could be a really good tool in the right circumstances.
That's the positive. What's the negative?
The negative is that you can leave so much power that there are underlying situations, emotions, things we can't predict in the future.
And they could give it to the caretaker.
And they can give it to the caretaker.
Which was never your plan.
If you had the opportunity to interview my wife and she was the first to pass, and you said, would you care if Paul gave your portion of the estate to a different spouse, or do you want it to go to the girls? What is her answer going to be? I want it to go to the girls.
Of course.
Over my dead body. Is he going to give it to another person that's a spouse? So therein lies the value then, okay? Therein lies the value, which is, no, it's not about a trust factor because my wife trusts me. That's not the issue. The issue is, do you have a strong value to ensure that it gets left to the right people? And if that answer is yes, then we use a limited one. Mm. If the answer is no, I really want to leave my spouse with all power, all control, even if it ended up in someone else's hands that I personally would have not chosen, then that would be a broad power. Mm. And so the vision of a of utilizing a power of appointment is that the spouse has options left behind so that the plan can stay as unified as possible. But we have to have a longer conversation about what's the value. It's not about trust. It's about your value of ensuring that your part of the estate gets to the right people in the right way to fulfill your vision in estate planning.
Okay. Find out more about the power of appointment if you get in touch with Paul Grant. How do they do that, Paul?
Well, head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, and ways to communicate with us. And it's all found at legacyandfaith.com.
Okay. It's the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.